our practice is the way that enables us to experience and understand what it is that we already have. In other words, Zen practice is how we realize our true nature and recognize also and experience how it is that we cover up our true nature. And I think first we must know about our covering up before we can recognize what it is that we cover up. When we understand and then accept the various ways that we cover up the truth of our life, the way we cover up our true nature, when we understand how we do that, then we can start to accept ourselves just as we are. When we accept ourselves as we are, that is the activity of expressing our true nature, accepting ourself. When we do this practice, when we engage in this practice, we understand that we have to work on it. We can't take it casually. We have to work on it. But we should not mind the work. We should not resist the work. Maybe we will at first. But we need to get to the point where we don't mind the work that we have to do to understand our practice. And we also should not mind too much. We should not criticize too much the habit that we have had, the habit of covering up that we have had. When we notice that's what we've done, we shouldn't mind that and criticize ourselves for it, just recognize it. However, if we cover up how it is that we cover up, or if we cover up that we do cover up, that is called delusion, covering up that we cover up. That's called delusion. If we do that, we may create an image of ourselves and protect an image of ourselves that we would like to admire. But if we are pleased with an image that we have of ourselves, that will not enable us to feel close to our true self. So covering up is important to recognize in our practice. It's a habit that we can fall into. So in today's world, we know and we now talk about very frequently. Today the world is emphasizing materialism and science and technology. And it's important, those things are important, so that people can live comfortably and in good health. And they also help to make life more convenient, less troublesome. So it is okay to use the material things of the world. But we should use them without falling in love with them. And I think what's happened in the last half century or so, we have fallen in love with the things that have given us so many advantages, material advantages. We should use them, but not fall in love with them. So after we use something, some convenient thing or something that improves our health, after we use it, we need to have our mind come back to its true self. If instead our mind stays attached to the thing that it loves, we will forget ourselves and forget how to be in the world. And that is how life becomes superficial. Staying in love with all these things that provide us advantages. When we become attached to such things in the material world and the technical world, when we feel attached to such things, they may make us feel special, and they may make us feel empowered even. This device or this gadget makes me feel powerful. And when we feel empowered like that, we feel independent. I have what I want. And we feel then that there's no need to depend on others to satisfy us in some material way. I am independent because I have all these things. This is one of the dangers of having so many of these things that give us so many advantages. If we are concerned too much with collecting and surrounding ourselves with these things, material things and technical things, the more we collect them and the more we focus on them, the less we can relate to each other. We stop relating to people and we instead relate, you know, to these things. That means we will develop a very superficial attitude towards our relationship, and therefore a superficial attitude towards our life. We should be going in the other direction. When we develop a superficial attitude towards our life, then we will cover up our true self. We want to go the other way. And so our attachments make the mind superficial if we stay attached. We fall in love and we stay in love with the comfortable, the easy, the convenient way. Our mind becomes like a Hallmark card. And that season is now upon us. The season of the Hallmark card is now here. We now see the greeting cards everywhere. You can go to the pharmacy where you get your medicine. You can find them in the supermarket where you get your food. Or you can even go to the office supply store, which is set up to offer us these cards, these greeting cards. So they are up there now. So these cards are, you know, designed, or were designed maybe 100 years ago, as an easy way to send a greeting or a sentiment to somebody. It's easy. But of course, the sentiment that we send in this card, the sentiment was written by somebody else, of course. We just put our name on the bottom. So sending a card, which is easy, is not the same as making an effort to express our feeling in our own words. Well, the card isn't okay. The card is not a bad thing. It's useful. Can be useful, especially in the busy world we have these days and the many contacts and acquaintances that we have. But we should not let our mind become like a Hallmark card. You know, we should not let the mind become content with a few pleasant sounding words that we use over and over again. You know, if you want to send the Christmas cards, you go to the store and you buy a box of cards, maybe 20, and they all say the same thing. So we send them out to 20 people, same words over and over. It's not all bad. It's useful. It's a way to connect with many people in the midst of our busy lives. But we have to be careful not to let our mind become like that. We should not let our mind become a Hallmark card. That is, be content with a few pleasant sounding words that we use over and over. In our everyday life, when we meet somebody, it's very customary and it's common and it's accepted to say, "How are you?" We say that. It's a form of politeness and it's good. But do we really mean it? Or is it a Hallmark expression? Without too much sincerity. We run the risk of becoming superficial with each other when we are not personal, when we don't put some originality into our greeting with each other. We shouldn't just leave our greeting stay at the usual, "How are you?" It has to be more than that. We have to say something based on our personal relationship with who it is we meet. Something original that fits this moment. We need to be fully present with each other in this moment, even though we use the phrase, "How are you?" over and over. We can still be fully present with each other and be original and personal. To be superficial means to not say what we mean and not mean what we say. When we become contented with just simple sentiment. So if you run into a friend of yours and she says, "Oh, we must get together. I'll call you," and does not. And this gets repeated again and again. This is not a deep relationship. This is just polite and superficial and does not provide us with good feeling. It's like a Hallmark card. So if we meet with each other or connect with each other and use what we think are the correct words to use when we meet, but then we do not follow through, then we are behaving as if we were a card. Here I am, just a few simple words, but nothing more. So, a superficial mind, a hallmark mind, can appear in many different ways. When we become careless, when we become biased, or habitual, or ungenerous. So, most of you, if you've been practicing for a while, you read some Zen history, and you know about Dogen, the founder. He went to China in the year 1223. Tough, difficult trip from Japan to China, and the Japan Sea in those days, very difficult. He was seeking for an authentic teacher who could relieve his doubts and answer his questions. So he got to China. And after 2 years of visiting various temples and various teachers, he became disillusioned with the teachers that he met. He became very discouraged because he noticed that they were very careless with their clothes. They were careless with their personal habits. And they were very indifferent to the practice. And he kept a journal where he wrote these things down. And he was getting ready to return to Japan when he met, the last minute he met this teacher. He found a serious teacher at the last minute. Somebody who was not superficial. So, our founder, founder of the San Francisco Zen Center and our lineage, Suzuki Roshi, he came to the U.S. And because he respected Buddhism so much. He believed in it so much. And he felt that the people in Japan did not appreciate it. And he came to America because he felt the Americans would not be superficial. He had a sense that the people he found here would not be superficial with their practice or casual, like he felt had happened in Japan. He felt that in Japan they just only did ceremonies, just went through the motions, but really were not interested in getting to the essence of the practice. And he thought in America they will, they are serious. So he came. So to treat our life in a superficial way, as if it or we were like a greeting card, we can't say bad or wrong. That's too judgmental. We shouldn't say that. We shouldn't be so harsh. But when we have a question about our life, when we feel troubled, when we feel confused, when we don't understand the meaning, the first thing we need to do is to look at ourselves and ask the question, am I being serious or casual with my life? Am I expecting things to just come to me? Am I being casual with my effort? Or am I seriously trying to understand, first thing we have to do is look at our own attitude. Am I being serious or casual? So, how we come to feel the way we do, serious or casual, it's hard to know the source. It's hard to see. Because these days, we have been comfortable for so long. 100 years or so, we've been comfortable for so long. It's hard to know how we feel. So the foundation of our practice is that we rely on ourself and our own effort. We rely on ourself to do the work that is necessary and not rely on others to do the work that we need to do ourselves. This is the basis of our practice. I need to do the work. And I came across a story that illustrates that point. I came across this story in a book that I've had for many years. It's called Stories of the Spirit, Stories of the Heart. So, in this story, a young man comes to see the Buddha. Oh, I should say, this story takes place 2,000 years ago. 2,200 years ago. A young man comes to see the Buddha and joins the congregation that gathers to listen to the Buddha's talk. And this young man frequently comes and joins the congregation to hear the lecture. And one night, he comes a little bit early and he finds that the Buddha is alone, not surrounded by his attendants. And he goes to the Buddha and he says, he asks, for many years I've been coming here, and I have seen many people who are fully liberated, but I see many who don't change, and that includes me, he says. Many don't change. Some even become worse. Their difficulties and their character becomes worse. They haven't changed in all these years. Why don't you, the Buddha, with all your power and your wisdom, why don't you, with your power, why don't you change them, these people? Why don't you enlighten them with your power? So the Buddha asks the young man, where do you live? And the young man says, well, I live here in Savasi. And the Buddha says, well, where were you born? Were you born here? He said, no, I was born in Rajagaha, the capital of the kingdom of Magadha. And I settled here in Savasi a few years ago. And then the Buddha says, well, then now that you're living here, have you severed all your connections with the people in Rajagaha? The young man says, no, I still have relatives there and I have business there. I haven't severed connections. And the Buddha says, well, then that must mean you go back and forth a lot. So, yes, I do. I often go back and forth. And so then that means you must know the path very well. Oh, yes. Yes, I do. I'm an expert on the path. I've done it many, many times. And the Buddha says, your friends know you, and so they know that you do know the path. And the Buddha then asks, if they ask you about the path from here to there, do you tell them everything? Do you hide anything? He says, no, sir, I explain everything. I tell them exactly how to go from here to there. Then the Buddha says, does everyone who sets out from here to go to Rajagaha, do they all reach it? And the young man says, not all, only those who follow the entire path will reach it. And the Buddha then says, well, in the same way, people ask me, what is the road to Nirvana? And I clearly explain to them, here is the path. And the Buddha says, sometimes people nod and say to me, oh, very good, that's very good. But I don't want to take the trouble to walk on that path. The Buddha says then, how can such a person reach the goal? He finally says, I cannot carry anyone on my shoulders. No one can carry anyone else on his shoulders to the final goal. Each person has to walk himself, take every step on the path himself. This is the attitude of our practice. When we understand it, when we know and accept that it is up to us to take every step on the path, then there's no danger of us becoming superficial. Then we are quite serious about our effort. And even though we may use politeness with each other during the day, and we exchange these Hallmark cards as a form of social connection, it's okay. As long as we know not to let our mind become like one of those cards, but to take every step on the path through our own effort. So, my wife and I are doing our cards to friends all over. And we always make a point to say something personal to each one. Put some of us in there so the card is not just something off the printing press. So this is our way of bringing the practice into our everyday life, using the convenience of the things around us, but not getting carried away with all that convenience. Take some time, make the effort to find a connection. Make the effort to keep connection. And I think in this holiday season, when all these gifts are being exchanged, the best gift is when we give ourselves to each other. So, does anyone have a question tonight? Yes, Richard.
Well, at the beginning you talked about we have our essential Buddha nature, our true essence, but then we cover over it. And the way I heard that was, well, the cover over, but there was a second layer to it, like we cover over the action, which you called delusion. So it's like, I heard it in like psychological terms, like repression or denial, or I wonder if you could give one or two examples of how we cover the first layer, how we cover it over, and then the second layer, how we deny that action. Am I making sense? Could you like discuss that a little more?
Maybe you have a friend who has a habit of complaining. There's always some complaint about something. They complain. And you notice it, other people notice it. It's your friend, but you notice that this friend complains a lot. So one day you say to your friend, you know, you should try not to complain so much. And he says, I don't complain. Instead of saying, oh, Richard, do you think I do? Tell me how you experience that. Instead of trying to understand, there's immediate defense. Oh, I don't. That's a cover up. The person complains, doesn't see it, and that's a cover up, and then says, oh, no, I don't do that. That's another cover up. So, you know, part of the attitude that we develop is if somebody says, you know, you got to watch something. Oh, tell me more, enlighten me. What is it? I didn't recognize. I was covering up. Tell me more. I don't want to cover up again. It's like that. Yes, please.
When I think about giving a card that's pre-written versus one that I'm writing myself, one of the things that kind of comes to me is like that, oh, I have to be creative and think of the clever card versus purchase the clever card. That doesn't seem right to me. It seems like it's more about that I have to, or it's better to take the risk of showing myself. And maybe I'll not have a very clever card, or maybe I'll say something vulnerable. So it seems like it's the vulnerability of letting yourself, that taking the risk, that sort of lights up and makes more sense to me. But then when I hear this phrase, casual versus serious, then I start to think back again to, oh, that's serious, meaning working hard, meaning being creative and being clever again. And I'm trying to think, is seriousness, being serious instead of casual, is that really more about being vulnerable, being taking risk, being willing to show up without knowing it's safe, and being willing to take the chance, just whatever's there is enough. Like you said in the beginning, that you're whole goal is that you're already enough. So I'm just trying to parse those ideas of casual serious, is that really vulnerable versus contrived?
I think when you say vulnerable, I think you mean, are you willing to express your feeling?
I think if you express your feeling and everybody loves it, then there's no vulnerability, but there's always the chance that you won't play. Or, yeah, so that's what I'm thinking.
I think the risk that we should watch for, or the vulnerability that we should watch for, is not so much about ourselves, but about what we say and how it will affect the other person. If we choose words to express a feeling or a sentiment, if the words we feel are protective of us, but overlook that they might not be quite comfortable for the other person, then it didn't work. We come away feeling safe, but the other person says, "Oh, why say that?" So we choose our words to express a feeling that shows our support and our, well, admiration, our devotion, those things, to support the other person, not worry too much about how they think of us, as long as they say, "Oh, that's nice. That's good. He made me feel good. He's trying to make me feel good. He's not protecting himself. He's thinking about me." If we can have a relationship like that, then everything is fine. But you make a good point. Unless we choose our words carefully, sometimes we are vulnerable to maybe upsetting the relationship. So that's the part where we shouldn't be casual. We pay attention to the words we say, so that the relationship stays strong. So, we stay connected. Thank you for your question. So, oh, yes, Martha.
Regards to that, how are you? I was taking a German class one time, and the instructor had been born in Germany, and she said it's a very weird habit, this "how are you?" She said in Germany we just say "good morning, guten Morgen." She said if you ask somebody how they are, she said, "You better have the time to listen, because they're going to tell you." And she said there was, I think, George Bush Jr. was president at the time, and there was some catastrophe. He was going around visiting with the people who had been affected, and he would say, "Oh, how are you?" And the people would say, "Oh, I'm fine," but they were on the street, and they didn't have anything. And this instructor said that Germans couldn't understand that, the question and the answer. You know, it's a very cultural thing that we have. I don't know if England has it or whatever. Mm. It just says, "How are you?" And not really meaning it. It's part of the greeting.
Yes.
Anyway, I thought that was interesting.
It is interesting. Thank you. Yes, please.
But for myself, I mean, I used to confuse sincerity with brutal honesty, right? I thought that if I wasn't being brutally honest to someone, I wasn't being sincere.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times, brutal honesty, if you've seen someone when you haven't seen in a while, and I walk up and say, wow, you gained some weight, you look terrible. I mean, you know, that's not going to make the person's day, and it's not going to do much in the way of helping them. So I think there's a bit of judgment when it comes to the perfunctory, you know, guten Abend in German, you know, how are you? Germans say that a lot. I think it, you don't always have to be so serious that, you know, you're brutally honest with a person. But my feeling is that you leave a person a little better than when you found them. And if, how are you? Is your family doing okay? How have things been? If that leaves the person with a good feeling and better than you found them, then you've done some good.
Yes, exactly. And yeah, if you take that approach to your relationships, everything's fine. Thank you.